of the times you were expecting us to be here. We are here Monday to help you console the situation that ails us all. I'm John Browner. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Lawhead, and we are here to help you with what happened in last night's game. On the Mightier 1090, I'm John Browner again, and this is Browner and the Lawhead. Again, we are here Monday through Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We do more entertainment conversation than we do X's and O's. So if you came here to have a breakdown of how many centimeters the ball was off the plate, can't help you. If you're here to talk about OPS, can't help you. But we're going to spend today talking about the Padres and what conjured or congregated or any of those fancy words last night. Jason, what's up, brother?
What's up, my man? Was really pulling for the Padres in this thing, especially after my Cleveland Guardians went down. And
the not Indians.
Yeah, the not Indians. But I think the Padres, and we'll get into it obviously more, I think they've got a lot to feel good about. I think as an organization as a whole, as a locker room, as a clubhouse, I think they've got a lot of good things that came out of this and that are going to come out of this in the future. But yeah, it's tough. You never want to lose, especially in a series where you think you could have won and maybe been the better team in a lot of areas. It's a tough one to swallow.
Let's start with the pain. When we found out it was the Phillies, everybody immediately perked up when we knew it wasn't the Braves, because we knew the Braves would be another 100 win team, and it's another battle uphill where nobody expects for you to win after not expecting to win against the Mets and winning after not expecting to win against the Dodgers and shocking the world, quite frankly. You find yourself against the Phillies, a team who with 87 wins during the season, you had 89. You figure, hell, we should be able to beat this team. So I think the reason why so many Padre fans feel like they had the air sucked out of them, because they felt like this was it. This was 1998. This was us going to the World Series. And what we came to realize was the Phillies played better baseball. I mean, there's no real – the Padres didn't blow it.
That's it.
Right. The Padres didn't blow it. They got beat by a better team. We didn't lose on a wild pitch. We didn't lose on some umpire's call. The Phillies were better.
Hey,
It's hard to swallow. It's hard to swallow, no doubt. But they were better. They just were. And we're going to – Jason, you've watched a lot of sports. You've seen a lot of baseball. I talked to Mark Loretta earlier on Kaplan and Crew. I hope you guys can check that out on YouTube as well. I got to ask you the same question. When a guy is as on fire as Bryce Harper was, I mean, that's about as on fire you will get, opposite of Barry Bonds literally being able to hit a home run every at bat. What would you have done in that situation? Because obviously this is now Monday morning quarterback, armchair, whatever you want to call it. Because what I would have done, and I'll let you respond, I would have walked him. I don't care that there's a guy on first and second, which Mark Loretta says you normally don't do that. You don't put the winning run on via walk. But as he also said, the winning run was standing at the plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if I would have walked him. That's tough because, you know, you had to get the leadoff runner out there. That was tough. I think at the end of the day, if the only thing that you could maybe say – Melvin could have did, and this is the only could have I would have given Melvin. I don't care what you want to say about the Clevinger start and Manaea coming in. You know, that is an off season. That is what you address in the off season. You have those two guys there on that day to do what they were supposed to do. You spot Clevinger four runs. He's got to come out of that bottom of the first no worse than one run, no worse than two. He can't make it feel like you just lost the inning and then he's gone. And then, you know, those are things that you can address in the offseason by going, look, Clevinger's not back. He's not just some young kid that blew up in the playoff moment. He's been there before. He's coming off injuries. He's just not the guy that's going to be the, you know, Manaea's another guy, had the chance. Chance is gone. Move on. But I would have probably brought Hader in. And I would have said, here's where we are. We're up against it. And if there's ever going to be a time, Josh Hader has been locked in from the time we got him right. And that's been Melvin's biggest accomplishment, in my opinion, to get this team to where they were to even compete. I mean, that was a close five-game series. That felt like they lost in seven, not like the Yankees were swept. That was a very close five-game series. And I probably would have just said, we got to pitch to this guy because we put this guy on, and he's just the go-ahead run that comes around. And now we've got a longer inning on our hands because there's a guy that doubled both of them home, and then he's standing on second, and this thing gets away from us. At least at the end of the day, Harper hits the home run. You're still down one. You got a chance to get one around to at least extend the game. My point is, if you were going to go, here it is. We've got to pitch to this guy. I'm going to ask Josh Hader to go get a six out save. And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But right now, I'm looking at it going, Roberto Suarez has got us all the biggest outs he's needed to get us here. Man. You know, he really has.
Yeah, that's true.
He really has.
He's and been great.
And we got a closer. We traded for this guy at the deadline. Here it is. Here's your moment. Take us to the fifth game. I won't ask you to pitch again unless it's a game, or take us to the sixth game. I won't ask you to pitch again unless we got a chance to put you in game seven, and we'll deal with the next game as it comes. And that's really all I think I'm going to question Melvin on. You got to pitch to him, because if you got first and second and nobody out and he's the go-ahead run and they're still moving stations along, then this thing really gets out of hand. And even if Suarez gives up the homer, or it's Hader that gives up the homer, you still got that one run to try to get back, probably, if things don't go really bad. But I thought Melvin coached and managed a great series. I don't think there's any second guessing. I think they were as close to winning that series when they put their bats away in the top of the first at game four. And then basically, I think they lost that series in the bottom of the first in game four. I think that's where the series was ultimately could have been won for the Padres had they gone into the top of the second up 4-0 or 4-1, and they were able to really keep aggressive and put that should have been a game that they won 9-2, 10-3, and it should have been a game five that was 2-2, no matter what Musgrove. I mean, you know, say what you want. They would have been great to win game three, but they still had that chance coming out in that opening inning in game four to be a team that could have came from 2-1 down to change the fortunes of those things. And that just didn't happen. And as you said, we will go back to the reason why. The Phillies just has been outplaying everything.
Yeah.
Nobody's playing better baseball than the Phillies.
Yeah. The Astros.
I don't think they're playing better baseball right now, because the Astros are just doing what the Astros are doing. The Yankees are not a team that is at that elite upper echelon and playing that kind of baseball like the Phillies.
Correct.
The Phillies played probably the best division series of anybody, if you looked at it against who they had to go up against in the competitions. It was either them or the Padres, the way they came out of those first rounds. Mm-hmm. And they played the best five-game series, the way they just, you know, it would be them or the Padres, right? Those were the two teams playing the best baseball in these rounds. Houston just, you know, won against Seattle, but they were close games. They had to go 18 innings without scoring a run in one game. And I think Philly's playing elevated baseball. I think they're playing the best baseball from the day one against St. Louis to day game five against San Diego, everything in between. They're doing everything. And like you said, Harper is being a MVP. He's being a postseason MVP right now. And then they've got
So the way that you described it, because we do agree, the person who beat them were the Phillies. But do you put more at the feet of Bob Melvin? Because you're making the point that I didn't really spend a lot of time thinking of, because, again, Sunday sucks so much out of me. That Harper home run sucks so much out of me. The idea that you gave Clevinger four runs, you knew as a staff he was hurt. You knew he had knee injuries. You knew he had some other injury that they're not talking about, which, okay. They say he won't use it as an excuse. As a manager, you got to be like, okay, well, if you're hurt, no. And go with Nick Martinez, but they didn't. And then regardless of how bad Clevinger was, you left the inning with the lead, and Nick Martinez didn't give up a run for the next three innings. You also added to that, it went from 4-3 to 6-3. So it begs me that my next question is, as it was getting away from Manaea, why sit on your hands? So how much of this do you put at the feet? Because I agree with you a lot that game four really slipped through your hands way more than game five did.
Anything, any other game that you lost. I mean, that was the game.
You literally had a stranglehold twice on this game. 4-0 and then 6-3. And you couldn't close the deal because two pitchers, one who hadn't pitched in forever in Sean Manaea, who you knew you were going to need that day, so chalk that up for whatever you want to chalk it up for, and Mike Clevinger, who was bad twice in very high leverage situations. He was terrible twice. So I don't really know what you want to call it, but how much of this do you put at the feet of Bob Melvin?
I don't, and I'll tell you what I call it. I call it those two guys letting you down, because I call it that if you go and you can second guess and say, why didn't they start Martinez? Well, Manaea was inevitable anyway. I mean, you can start Martinez, and Manaea is inevitable coming into this mix anyway, somewhere and sometime and for some time. And that was going to be on the ledger. So at the end of the day, you've never done that. You've never just said, we've gone to Martinez. You're not some, you know, deep-rooted playoff team that has been there before and been faced with this situation and had to have decided that, you know, this isn't – you've gone to Clevinger this year, and he's given you some starts. And, look, I feel like, obviously, if Clevinger and doctors and everybody that's around feels good enough that, hey, this guy can go out and try to get us at least 8 or 9 outs before we have to start digging into the bullpen, because they knew right away that this wasn't going to be some masterpiece by Clevinger by any chance. I mean, once they got the 4 runs, I'm sure Melvin was sitting there going, just give up one here. Just give up one here.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting here going, just give up one here. You can give up one in the second before I have to yank you, but just get me 7 or 8 outs. Just get me 7 or 8 outs. And he let him down. Manaea let him down. And at the end of the day, Bob Melvin has a 25-man roster. He's up against it in, you know, his first three pitchers all pitched well enough for him to try to keep his team in the games, win the games, do whatever they had to do to get to those points. You know, they were down 2-1, and he was there. And I think those two guys just let them down, you know. And at the end of the day, I thought Melvin managed them into this situation really well. And the Phillies are playing so good. They're playing so good. They're getting so many big hits, and they just add to the hits. And they nobody is stringing at-bats together on either. No team in this postseason is stringing at-bats together like the Phillies are. And the Padres have done a pretty good job of – coming up with some big at-bats, coming up with some big hits, having some big innings in these postseasons against good teams. Like you said, 100 games. And Philly just feels like the best team in the National League right now.
I'll give you my 2 cents on this, because this is what I feel like. This is the only thing I put at the feet of Bob Melvin, because I was in favor of the strategy. Because a lot of people are like, oh, they were against everything, he blah, 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 blah. Not me. I'm only against one thing that happened there. His strategy of pitching as if this thing is going 7, I thought it was the right move, because the Phillies were pitching, this thing ends tonight. By game 4 and game 5, they were pitching, this thing will not leave Philadelphia, because if it does, we're in trouble. And I think they knew that, and they were going for that. They were going for the win there. Mm-hmm. I don't mind him having Suarez be in there as opposed to Hader, because this is the formula that's gotten you to this point. He up to here. Just like, I mean, as much as it pains me to say Trent Grisham went 0-19 in a series, but Grisham got you there.
Yes, he did.
So, I mean, as bad as he was and as frustrating as it was to watch him go back to old Grisham, Bob Melvin stuck with the guy who got him there. And I respect that, and I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
But the idea that you would let the guy, okay, you let the guy beat you. Okay, you let LeBron James on the other sideline make the game-winning shot with one-on-one defense play. This is Kobe Bryant taking the last shot. That's what that was. This is you going 101 with Tyreek Hill. Like, with the game on the line. Like, baseball has it structurally set up that you could take the bat out of that guy's hand. And for me, baseball is the only sport that can remove the best player, because even if you double Tyreek Hill, the offense can get him open. You can double LeBron James, he can make a shot over two dudes, okay? I don't know how hockey works, and I don't know how soccer works, but that's that. In baseball, you can literally take the bat out of this guy's hands. And if Borum beats you or Castellanos beats you, I'm okay with that, because I believe Suarez is better than them. I thought Suarez was better than the rest of them. He wasn't better than Bryce Harper. No one was. And that leads me to this. I oftentimes work in a society or work in an industry that overpraises people who don't deserve it. Today, everybody should be talking about Bryce Harper. As much as it sucks that they beat the Padres, and as much as it sucks that his success came at the other end of our frustration, I have never seen a guy be that hot other than Barry Bonds. There was literally nothing you could do. He had a 10-game hitting streak. He got a hit in every game, 5 extra base hits. He only hit 2 home runs. It felt like he hit 10. That last home run he hit, that is legendary stuff.
Sure was.
That is legit legendary stuff. Bryce Harper has been a high school prodigy. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 years old as the baseball version of LeBron. Now, because of the way baseball is structured, he wasn't able to put his talents on display like that until last night. Because that doesn't happen very often. That is Michael Jordan over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Sorry. That is the block LeBron James had on Andre Iguodala. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the play that when they go over your career in the Hall of Fame, that's the one. That's the one. And it just pains me that baseball has a strategy for you to not be that guy and some other guy who would just be getting drinks for the rest of his life free in Philadelphia. But instead, you let a future Hall of Famer basically put his Hall of Fame moment on your team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, this guy has hoisted an 87-win franchise and made them look like, if you had to just to watch the playoffs only, you'd say this is the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, look, you know, the Padres got 2 great starts out of their ace, Darvish. They couldn't bring him home offensively. Wheeler was just a little bit better against that lineup than Darvish was. And Darvish pitched through some of probably not his best stuff. And he was still able to make, you know, the Padres have chances to win these games. And look, and you're right about all that stuff. But Roberto Suarez was getting big, big outs all postseason. Throughout the time that Harper was as hot as he was with his bat, Suarez was as hot as he was with his arm and in big innings and in big moments. So, will I let Kobe, you know, take a last shot? If it's a tough shot and the odds are he doesn't hit it with a great defender, maybe. So, I don't think you can second guess Melvin in a whole lot. I think, I think that he kind of moved the pieces that he had as best as he had. And the Phillies just playing good baseball. And they could beat the Astros the way they're playing, because the Astros are just kind of doing the business as usual stuff. If Philly can keep putting that kind of pressure on and string of bats together, they're playing elevated baseball. Houston's winning by a run, games by one run games. They might beat you 5-0, but they're not playing elevated Houston Astro baseball that we've seen when they've cheated. They're not knocking in 12, 13 runs and getting these big, you know, delicious wins in the postseason, but they are winning and they're good and they've got all the tools. But Philly's playing well enough to, they're not scared on the road. They've been on the road in every series. So they're playing well enough. If they get those middle games at home and they've got an edge in the series, they're going to be tough.
I honestly think that, I think the Astros would beat them, but
on paper, sure.
What I felt about what I saw from Bryce Harper last night, I always want to call attention to to guys who step up big in the moment, who are supposed to step up big in the moment. This isn't Robert Horry making a three. This isn't John Paxson making a three. Like, yeah. This isn't Adam Vinatieri kicking a field goal when Tom Brady drove him down. Like, this isn't Patrick Mahomes getting him down so the field goal kicker can go field goal. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the guy.
This is an Akeem quadruple double.
Being the guy at the moment to be the guy. So, you know, again, as much as it hurt, you witnessed probably one of the greatest moments in a person's career or one of the greatest moments an athlete can ever have, because hitting a home run is awesome. Hitting a home run in that situation is even better. So we got so much left to go on the show. We got a lot more Padre talk to get to. We are going to ask our questions about next season, and we're also going to tell you who's going and who may actually be back next year. Brown and Lawhead here on the Mighty 1090 ESPN. Brown and Lawhead back for the second half of the show. As usual, John Brown and Jason Lawhead here with you on the Mighty 1090 ESPN. If you missed anything that we said on the show in our post-mortem of the Padres regular season and postseason run, you can head over to iTunes and YouTube under Kaplan and Crew. We are the show with the date in front. Like, share, and subscribe that thing. We spent the first half of the podcast talking, basically praising Bryce Harper for being big on the moment, questioning whether or not how much of this you lay at the feet of Bob Melvin, and the fact that why would you do certain things in a series, and just the series overall. So if you guys missed any of that, head over to the iTunes podcast store, like, share, and subscribe, and over to YouTube to download and like that thing. Also subscribe. So when you have a season that, I mean, this is up and down for me. Mm-hmm. I want to try to put people in a time machine as best I possibly can. When the season started, Major League Baseball had the Padres as being one of the top five teams in the league. So I don't want to sit here and say this season came out of nowhere, because it didn't. When you're in the top five in the league and you win the last four teams playing, it's kind of expected. They had one of the best pitching staffs at the start of the league, if not top three pitching staff when the season started, as confirmed by people who watch and like baseball. And then you had a bunch of stuff go wrong. Tatis's injury and then subsequent drug bust. The team kind of feel like they hit the same lull that they did last year, only to have AJ Preller pull off a massive trade, followed by another sneaky trade, followed by even another sneakier trade. That being Josh Hader, that being Brandon Drury, that being Josh Bell coming over with Soto. That basically completely reformed the team. So when people say this came out of nowhere, I don't necessarily like that term, because people saw the Padres being good. The question was, could they survive the injuries, which they did for the most part of the year, and could they capitalize on the success? They did. They made it to the championship series. So I don't feel like this is a come out of nowhere season. Do you?
No, I mean, I think it was maybe a come out of nowhere postseason a little bit. Especially with the way early on the trade performed and looked like it was kind of maybe being a clunker for a little bit. And then everybody kind of started getting it together, especially Hader. That was the big, piece to the end of that run, was him getting right and making you feel like Soto's right enough and Bell and Drury will hit, get enough big hits. And, I think it may be the postseason with obviously what they were up against, so many great teams in the National League having so many great years, and it ended up being the 5 and the 6 seed in the NLCS. But no, I mean, look, I think that obviously it was disappointing what Tatis was promised to offer this franchise and this fan base. And, with all of the moves that Preller has made and a big one being going and getting a big adult in the room like Bob Melvin that can, kind of steer a ship over a long season when guys are hurt or, not coming back on the timeline or just all of a sudden being suspended and trying to get all these other pieces, moved in while you're still moving in as a manager. So hey, look, you know, this team, as I said, when they beat the Dodgers 3-1 after being owned by them all year and owned by them in these last handful of years in this most recent era of Padres rebuild and Dave Roberts kind of bringing the Astros to this, or I'm sorry, to the Dodgers to this precipice, this could be the changing of the guard. But they've got to strike now. They've got to build off of this 3-1 series win and get this team in spring training, excited, ready to go, adding what they need to add, cutting what they need to cut, and being everybody on board and Tatis understanding that, you know, his role is very important and what he does to get himself ready when it's time to be ready to join this team. He's got a lot of responsibility in helping put this team over the hump.
So we're going to, and I want to make something very clear to people. This is a topic show. We talk about things that are cool or funny or happening. So this is the moment. And I know some people are like, man, why are you guys talking about next season? The season just ended. Look, we've not talked about any other sports.
Yeah.
For days. For this show, weeks. And so for us, you know, the Lakers stink. That's a great topic for us.
Yeah.
The Chargers got blown out by the Seahawks. That's a great topic for us. We're gonna have to get back to some of those things. This isn't a show that's gonna be breaking down every move in the farm system or every offseason or some kid from Cuba they signed that's 15 years old. That's not how we get down. So we're doing this now so you can come back and listen to it later. We'll make it a best of and we'll play it when people get itchy about Padre baseball. I think that what you're saying is very true. The iron is hot. And you have to continue to strike it to form the best possible sword. Coming back, you have your top three starters being Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, and Joe Musgrove. So your top in your rotation is set. You need to find another guy. Obviously, we'll get to the other two who won't be here. You have your five everyday starters that'll be back. That'll be Soto for two more years, Machado, Kim, Cronenworth, Austin Nola. And then you add Tatis in there, that's actually six guys. And we'll talk about Tatis later. That's six everyday guys that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your closer, which is one of the best players in baseball. Depending on what you can do with Suarez, you may have your setup guy. So you go into the year, if you played your cards right, with your eighth inning guy, your ninth inning guy, your three top line starters, and six everyday starters coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of – you got a great foundation to build from. Now you've got to, like, go find a fourth and fifth starter. You know, Clevinger's a free agent. You dump him. Manaea, gone. Free agent. And
because let's go down these free agents one by one.
I'd like to see him keep Bell. I'd like to see them somehow keep Josh Bell. I like Josh Bell in this lineup. I like him being a part of what they've got.
Let's start there. Josh Bell. Keeping or letting walk?
I'd like to keep him. Obviously, you want to afford him. He made $10 million this year. You want to make a price that's right. That you know, but I think he's a nice piece to that lineup, and you know, he could be that everyday guy that could add, you know, 35 home runs to the lineup and be big. He was big, and he had some big postseason hits.
He had some big postseason hits for the Padres. For me, I'm letting him walk. Here's why.
Okay.
Of the games he was in Petco, the power wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't. And so I think when you're looking at this roster, looking at a power guy is where we're going to fail. You got to accept there will not be a 50 home run hitter in a Padre uniform in that park.
Mm-mm.
It's just not going to happen. So what you need is guys who contact guys who can hit the ball, who can move runners over, and they have some speed on the base pass, and they're probably versatile in the field. So for me, having a slugger like that, not necessarily being able to take advantage where you play most of your games, which are at home, I feel like for Josh Bell, you got to let him walk.
That's a fair point.
Brandon Drury, walking or keeping or walking?
I'm letting him walk.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I think he had enough time to prove whether he was a keepable commodity. And I need guys, like you said earlier, that you can string better at bats together with.
I'm letting him walk too for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. Some that you stated, I just don't necessarily see. And two, well, and I'll go down the list again to kind of do this other thing that I want to try to bring up as well. So Brandon Drury didn't do enough.
Mm-mm.
He had one home run in the game where everybody hit home runs. Outside of that, he really didn't do enough for me to grant bringing him back. In the field, he didn't really appear to be that versatile. He was at first base. The game I saw him play at third base, he was atrocious when Manny was hurt or out. So for me, if you these guys that we're talking about now, you need to keep them because they can do more than one thing. And I think this is a situation where Brandon Drury doesn't offer enough, whether it be moving the base pass, and like we already talked about the power, just not enough for me, so I'm going to let him walk.
Yep.
Will Myers, these are free agents we're talking about.
Right.
These are free agent guys. Will Myers, you're going to keep him or let him walk?
Well, you know, Will's been great. I think, though, if you go into the next phase of this team and what they're built off of right now, you know, I just think you have to try to, you know, add some youth to where a guy like that is positioned on your roster. And then, you know, it'll be tough to say goodbye to Will, but you got to think to the future, and you got to think to, like you said, more versatile ball players that can do a lot of different roles on the bench, even if it's come playoff time, even if they're not in the starting lineup. You can't have guys like Will Myers hogging up space on the bench.
So for me, I'm a keeper here.
Okay. You're a loyal guy.
I'm a keeper here. Here's why. I've seen Will Myers in his tenure with the Padres play damn near every position except for starting pitcher. He's pitched too, but everything but starting pitcher. Now, most of that moving him around was because there were buffoons managing the team, and because they were paying him so much, they wanted him to be out there.
Right.
And that really kind
of – And there was a lot of bad players at a lot of those other positions. A
lot of bad players.
Where he's not going to cover that kind of ground even as he
–
You know, that's just not his – you know. So, he's not that Swiss Army knife he was or could be at one point.
So for me, I'm keeping Will Myers because he's been here the longest. He's the goofy guy that's in the locker room. He's the most recognizable Padre from a fan perspective because he's been here so long. He's the everyday version of Joe Musgrove without the statistics. So we've seen Will be good in a short season. We've seen Will be good in spots. The reason why I'm bringing Will Myers back is for something that we're going to go over with the other two guys that I forgot and I wrote it down. I'm bringing Will Myers back on an asterisk. That asterisk is at the right price.
Well, at that $1 million, which would be, I mean, he might be able to find a place to go somewhere else that pays him a little bit more money.
If I'm Will Myers, I'm looking at the right price in San Diego because I've made a ton of money here. My family has been here for almost a decade. I'm established within this community. And two, I can take $3 to $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to hurt me to take $3 to $5 million for another 1 year offer. I come up big in that 1 year on a team that will be competitive next year. More time in a spotlight. I hit a couple home runs. I make myself look good in the postseason. Now you go cha-ching again. Because the best thing he could possibly do for himself is be around for another year when the team is in the spotlight, playing more national television games, and getting themselves in the position. So that's why I'm keeping Will Myers, but I'm keeping Will Myers at the right price. Mike Clevinger. No?
No, got to go.
Okay.
Got to go. And he just had time to prove, and this last postseason start is just, you've got to cut yourself clean of that. You know, that I really believe, like I said earlier, I think that they were a top of the first away from, you know, changing the whole outlook of this series, and then to the bottom of the first away from white knuckling it to just stay in that series. And it was, it really was not just a bad inning and a loss in a series. It really swung the momentum of the whole kind of idea of, you know, the Phillies are just the better. It just implemented it.
Right.
And I think you just got to get away from that. I think that's something that from this year you want to move away from. And Clevinger will find work somewhere else, but I think you're better off going in and spending money on a fresh starter that can come in here and not have that history hanging over his head.
For me, Mike Clevenger is a walker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm letting him walk because I'm letting him walk because he was out there like the walking dead. You ain't gave me nothing. You ain't done nothing when I needed you to do something. One of the reasons why I've spent so much time praising Bryce Harper on the first part of this show is because when you show up, that's how you get my respect. You show up in moments where we need you to show up, you get my respect. If he'd have given me four runs, two innings, or four innings, two runs, you good in my book, Mike Clevenger. Come on back. But you couldn't even get it out, bro.
Mm-mm.
Mike Clevenger threw 15 pitches. I thought it was 100 as long as he was out there. It was such a brain fart of a situation that he got out there and did. I really, for me, in a Padres uniform, I can't shake that. I can't unsee that. And so he's walking. Ain't no right price for him. He done.
And the thing that does, and I'm not trying to pile on Clevenger, bash on Clevenger. You know, it's tough to be a pro athlete in those
absolutely
situations.
Absolutely, we're not saying we're
but
not
what
doing
he,
that.
But what he did, what happened that day, wasn't just he didn't just give Philly all the confidence in the world at the end of that inning. What he did was is he not only did he bolster up their batting order and go, guys, we can win. Oh man, we're gonna do. Is he gut punched his own? Yes. And you can deal with that in the middle of June one day. You're playing day after day, and you guys go out and jump on a pitcher and get four runs on him. And then all of a sudden your starter comes out and gives up three right behind it. And you're just like, yeah. You know, and that's kind of a punch in the gut for a day. But you get over that because next day's mm-hmm. June 25th, 26th, 27th. There's 100 more of these things.
Right.
But when you're in that moment and you've worked so hard and played so long to that October moment, and these are the big moments. That is a stinger, and that stays in a clubhouse. And, you know, I just think that you got to wring that out and just got to kind of wash your hands of that kind of feeling and history. And, you know, next year when you're going into October, you know, you want all the guys that are in that locker room looking at each other to feel real confident about who mm-hmm. else is dressing up in that uniform. And I just think that, you know, as much as a great guy Clevenger is and how much hard he works and, you know, he's a fan favorite, he's a likable guy. I just think that's the biggest reason you have to just to go do business away from him next year.
So the next guy, Sean Manaea. Keeping it walking.
You know, that's another – it's really that Manaea and Clevenger kind of fall in what happened. And as I said earlier in the first part of the show, you know, more than Melvin, more than anything else, more than anybody else, more than, you know, a guy's or two's bats that went quiet in this series, you know, those two guys really let you down in the game that you had to have. You had to have game four, and you played well enough offensively, and, you know, you did the things that you needed to come out and, you know, punch back. You know, the Padres punched right back in game four, and then those guys let them down. So I think you got to just clean your hands of that kind of history. And like I said, you know, I think it's going to make the guys that stick around from last year that are back in the clubhouse a little bit more, you know, a little bit more confident, a little bit stronger in the sense that they've got, you know, the other guys around them that they feel good about going to battle with.
Sean Manaea can walk. Not only can he walk, I will pack his bags. Not only will I pack his bags, I will drive him to the airport.
Yeah.
Because, buddy, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
When the Padres got Sean Manaea, it was very well known what he was. He's an innings eater who's going to give up runs. Because you need those during the regular season. There are 162 games. There are injuries. There are a multitude of things where Sean Manaea on a roster can be very valuable. He's not going to be terrible every outing because they're bad teams
right.
where he can get a win or he can give you six or seven innings and help you get over the hump. He gives up three runs against a bad team. The problem is he gives up six and seven against good teams. And when you get into a playoff situation similar to what you were just speaking about, Clevenger, you can't have Sean Manaea out there literally gutting the team. You can't have it. And so of all the people on this list, whether it be Josh Bell or Brandon Drury, Will Myers, who I wanted to keep, Clevenger, Sean Manaea is the one guy he gots to go. He got to go, and he got to go fast. I don't know. When his agent calls AJ Preller, bro, who is this?
Yeah.
Who you the agent? Unless Scott Boras is his agent, I'm not even taking the call. Because I don't want to make Scott Boras mad just because of the way the system's structured. But if I was Salmonar, I would hire what's his name? I just forgot the man's name. Damn it. Drew Rosenhaus does football. I would hire whatever his name is, the baseball guy who gets everybody contracts, who gets everybody hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. I would hire that man right now. I would have hired him on the flight back because he's going to need some help because that was damn pathetic. So he ain't coming back here. So he can go. He ain't for the right price. Now, we got a minute left. Right price, yes or no? Could you have Bell back for the right price, yes or no?
For Bell, yeah. I like Bell back for the right price. I wouldn't mind, you know.
Drury for the right price.
No, not Drury.
Myers for the right price.
Well, Drury doesn't make much money, so I guess I did entertain it. Myers, no. I just think that, you know, I mean, if he's going to come back at the, you know, the veteran minimum, possibly. But I'm trying to get some younger guys. You know, I think you got to replace Grisham. I think you got to go find some better hitting in that outfield. So you may have to spend a little bit more. And I'm waiting for Tatis to get back. And I want some other versatile young guys in there that I can mix around and, you know, give guys days off, pinch run, pinch hit, do all of that kind of stuff.
So it's been a fantastic season.
It really has.
It had its ups and downs, but it provided you what San Diego needed. San Diego as a sports city needed that shot in the arm. We needed to know that it was real. We needed to know that we still had that punch, that still had that fan fastball, and they showed up and they showed out. And on half of Browner and Lawhead, we thank you guys. Till next time, which is tomorrow. Browner and Lawhead, peace.